Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Nun Ted Amud Bet. Gemara left off yesterday with the hierarchy with regards to giving out the Aliyot, and we ended off with Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. And as we noted in the Mishnah, that only solves a part of the problem. It doesn't completely solve the problem. It helps you out maybe for the first two Aliyot, maybe even for the third Aliyah, but then you still have a slew of Aliyot that are all Yisraelim. And once again, you're faced with the same problem again of a hierarchy of who goes first. That's the question that's being posed now, which is, Shalchulei b'nei Glila, the Rebbe Chelbo, achareihem mikorin. After the Kohen Levi, who comes next? So lo havi biyodei. He didn't have an answer for that. Alta v'shaylei the Rebbe Yitzchak Nafko. So he went to Rebbe Yitzchak Nafko to find out, amalei, achareihem korim, talmidei chachamim, hamumunim, parnasim, ala tzibur. After them, you call the Talmidei Chachamim, who are leaders of the community. And as Rashi notes over here, that the definition of a Talmud Chacham, who is a Parnas HaTzibur, is Kol Shesholim Oto Devar Halacha B'chol Makom Ve'omra. You can ask him a halacha question in anywhere, from any topic, and he's able to respond to it. So it's a pretty high standard or threshold. So those individuals are the next in line for Aliyot, for the Shlishi. Then, v'acharehen, Talmidei Chachamim haru'uim limnotam parnasim ala tzibur. So the next group of individuals are people who are not appointed as the leaders of the community, but are worthy of being leaders of the community. And the same standard, which is that they are worthy, that means you can ask them something from anywhere in the Halacha in the Torah, and they will respond to you. After that, v'achareihem b'nei talmidei chachamim shavoteihem mimunim parnasim ala tzibur, the children of those that are appointed as leaders of the community, v'achareihen, and after them, roshei knesiyot, which is the gabai, the shamash, the people who take care of the shul, v'chol adam, and then anyone else. So over here you have a hierarchy or list of individuals of how you used to give out the Aliyot. Might prevent some of the fighting, not completely, because obviously there's still room for subjective decision-making here. But the idea generally was to lay out some sort of framework that would help the individuals giving out the Aliyot, as to not have it be a free-for-all and always an argument about who goes first. Then, Shalchulei b'nei Galil, the Rabbi Chelbo. We have an additional question that was sent from the individuals up north, from the Galil to Rabbi Chelbo. Ma'u likrot b'chumashim b'beit ha'kneset b'tzibur. Are you allowed to read in a chumash in the shul for the tzibur? Now, chumash in their day is not a chumash like we speak about today, a printed chumash, but rather means a chumash in the sense of it was a complete sefer, like a Sefer Torah, was completely kasher. It just doesn't have all five of the Chamesha Chumshei Torah, just one of the five Chumshei Torah. And that's what it means, that can we read out of a Chumash? Do we need a full Sefer Torah? Or is it okay if we read from a Torah that just has Breshit in it, or just has Shmot in it? Lo havi biyodei. Again, he didn't have the answer to that question. Alta shayla de Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. So then he went back to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. Lo havi biyodei. He also didn't know. Ata Shal Bay Midrash, so they went to the Bay Midrash to see what the answer to the question would be. Upashtua meha. They tried to answer the question from this. Amar of Shmuel bar Nachmane, Amar Rabbi Yochanan or Yonatan, Sefer Torah shechaser yiriyah achat, ein korim bo. Sefer Torah that's missing one column or one page in it, you do not read in it. The truth is that you don't have to go that far. It can be a Sefer Torah that's missing anything in it, any chaser. Anything that's not a Sefer Torah, we'd be posel the Sefer Torah. But just for good measure, this is Sefer Torah that's missing something in Korimbo. So they wanted to extrapolate from a Sefer Torah chaser and say that a chumash is the equivalent of a Sefer Torah chaser. It's just missing the rest of the Torah. But as you know, it's totally different. Velohi, that's not the case. Hotam mechaser b'milte. Over there, it's supposed to represent the whole Torah, and it's missing something in the Torah. Over here, whatever's supposed to be here is here, and therefore it should be kasher. So Rabbo v'Rav Yosef Damrei Tovayu ein korin b'chumashim b'beit haKnesset mishum kavod tzibur. We don't read with chumashim in the Beit Knesset out of kavod haTzibur. Which is interesting because the implications of that statement halachically are that the reason is kavod atzibur, which means that they are inherently, or bidyavad, they are kasherim. It's just that mikvei kavod atzibur, we don't allow you to read from them. From that, there are rishonim that come to the conclusion that Rambam, who is the most meikel in this area, says, well, if that's the case, then if it's only a problem of kavod atzibur for chumash, then certainly by a sefer Torah chaser, you should be able to read from it bidyavad. And that's where the Rambam paskins, that bidyavad, if there's no other sefer Torah, just the sefer Torah pasul, you can read from that sefer Torah pasul and make brachot on it. Other rishonim, like the Rashba, indicate that from here you see that, yes, a sefer Torah that's missing something is definitely pasul, but chumashim are only precluded because of the fact that it's kavod atzibur, and therefore bidyavad. If you have a whole Sefer Torah, and there's psulim in the Sefer Torah, but those psulim are in chumashim that are, you're not reading in. So for instance, you're reading Shmot now, and the entire Shmot is okay. It just happens to be that there's something wrong in Breshit. So he says or suggests that bidyavad, you could read from such a Sefer Torah. The Shita is brought down in Shulchan Aruch as well. And it leads to major confusion because of these different positions of the Rishonim, as to how to paskin with regards to Sifrei Torah that are psulim, meaning that if you're reading and they find a psul in the middle of what you're reading, what do you do in that case? Because is a Sefer Torah psul kasher bidyavad, like the Rambam says, or maybe even bidyavad, it's problematic, but if that's the case, don't you have to go back to the beginning of the laning because now you found a mistake? So all of these have ramifications in what you do when you find a Sefer Torah psul, or your only option is a Sefer Torah Pasul or a Chumash in this way. And again, majority of the Rishonim believe that you can't read in a Sefer Torah Pasul. The Rambam is really a Dat Yachid there. With regards to a Kosher Chumash versus other areas of the Torah that are maybe Psulim, there's a little more latitude. Some of the Rishonim allow it. The majority of the Rishonim say that a Chumash is no good and a Sefer Torah Pasul is no good even bidyavad. Now we have another din that is brought by Rabbi and Rav Yosef, which is Rabbi and Rav Yosef, Dar Meitavayu, Hai Sefer Aftarta Asur L'Mikrei Bebe Shabbat. The Sefer of Haftarot is Asur to read from on Shabbat. So they had the equivalent of what we have in a printed version today, which is a book that just has the Haftarot that you lean, not the whole Navi, not the whole Tanakh, simply the Haftarot that they do on Shabbat. So instead of being in a book, they had it in a cloth. And they had the Haftarot written out in that way. So instead of being in a book, it's in a cloth. They don't allow it. My taima. Delo nitan likatev. Because you're not allowed to write it down in that manner. Which is not so clear. There's no normative basis for this statement. It seems to be an extrapolation from the Chumash or from the Torah. Which is just like the Torah has to be written in whole sections, whether it's Chumashim or a whole Sefer Torah. So too with the Nevi'im, you can only write them as a whole Sefer. You can't just take clips out of the Navi and write them down. So then the Gemara says, Marba Ravashi Amar, the Tultului Nami Asur. To carry them is also Asur on Shabbat. They become Mukse, my Taima, Da'ai Lo Chazi the Mikre Bey, because you can't read them. So if you can't read them, then you can't utilize them on Shabbat, and they become Mukse. Velohi, that's not correct. Shari the Tultule, Vishare the Mikrebe. They're both mutar to carry them around, and they are mutar to read them. They're Yochanan v'Rishim ben Yochlish, Yochanan v'Rishim ben Lakish, Mayne v'Sifra d'Agadato v'Shabto. They used to read from the Sefer Agadot on Shabbat. Now, Sefer Agadot, it's not clear what this is, but it seems to be that this is the precursor to the Midrash, or the Midrashei Agadah that we have today, whether it's Midrash Rabbah or the Yalkut Shimoni, seems to be that this is a precursor to that. And they used to learn this together on Shabbat, but that is Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is not allowed to be written down, and still they were reading from a book that had this written down in it. Va'alo nitan likatev. Over there, it's not allowed to be written, and yet they were still using it. Ela, kevin delo efshar. Since it's impossible otherwise, eight lasot Hashem heferu Torah Techa, there's a time to do for Hashem, which requires you to be mefer the Torah, meaning sometimes there's a small violation, but that small violation in the bigger picture helps to promote the Torah and save the Torah. And over here too, the violation of writing down Torah Shebaal Peh, that violation is worth abrogating in order to save the Torah Shebaal Peh. Because if we don't do that, we'll have nothing left. So there, they allowed it to write it down to make it possible to learn from. It might be even that it's permitted, not just that we're overriding that halacha, but it might be that in their day, we find this in the early on in the Gemara and Shabbat and other places, they found scraps of paper. People used to write in the beginning when they were learning Torah Shebaal Peh, they should take some notes, they should write it down until they committed it to memory. And then afterwards, they put those notes into Geniza. So it might be even that is allowed, l'chatchila, which is if it's facilitating the ability to have Torah Shebaal Peh, maybe you can write it down to facilitate it. Over here, they're talking about this Sefer Agadata, whether that was under this normal version of learning Torah Shebaal Peh, or whether this is already looking at the takana of Rabbi and Ravashi to write down Torah Shebaal Peh in order to preserve it, it might be a part of that. But either way, it's something that's normally not allowed to be written because it's Torah Shebaal Peh and is written down anyway, because Eid Lasot Hashem Heferu Torah Techa, as Rashi says here, Im Be'al Eid Lasot Takana L'Shem Shemaim Heferu Divrei Torah L'Sha'ah Hatzricha. When there comes a moment where it's necessary to abrogate the Torah to ensure the greater commitment and preservation of the Torah, sometimes you have to do that. And that's what's been done here. Hachanami. So too, with regards to the Sefer of Torot, since it's not always possible for a community to buy a cloth that has the whole Sefer Navi in it, if you're reading from a couple of prakim from Yeshayahu, a couple of prakim from Yirmiyahu, a couple of prakim from Yechezkel, it's much easier just to have those written down than have to write a whole Sefer Yeshayahu, a whole Sefer Yirmiyahu, a whole Sefer Yechezkel. And the communities couldn't afford it, or it wasn't possible for them. Since it's impossible, we don't want you to forego the Haftorah. We'd rather you read the Haftorah and have it in this manner rather than not have it at all. And so again, they're invoking the principle. It's slightly different in its usage between what Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were doing, because they're talking about Torah Shebaal Peh, which is not allowed to be written down. And that was for the preservation of Torah Shebaal Peh. Over here, the Eino Yachol or Eif Shar is that the communities may not be able to afford to write Nevi'im ala Klaf, or the whole Navi ala Klaf, and therefore they permit it because of that. So the Eid Lasot Hashem of Heru Torah Techa, it's not necessarily the preservation of Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's allowing for the Takanat Chachamim of Torot to continue because they have it written down. If they don't have it, then they won't be able to do it. And if you demand the whole Sefer, they're just not going to read Hanaf Torah. So Bayimine Abayimi Rabbo. Mahu lichtov Megillah l'tinok l'itlamed. Do you have permission to write down a section of the Torah for a child to learn from? Mar says, Tibailamandamar Torah Megillah Megillah nitna. It's a question according to the one who says that the Torah was given section by section. Tibailamandamar Torah Chatuma nitna. It's a question according to the one who says Torah was given in one block, meaning a single sefer. So Tibailamandamar Torah Megillah Megillah nitna. It's a question according to the one who says it was given in sections. Kevin de Megillah, Megillah nitna, kotvin. So maybe since originally it was given in sections, so too you can write it down in sections for the child to learn. Odilma, Kevin de idbak, idbak. Once it was stuck together, made into a single sefer, you can no longer parse it into its individual parts or its megillot. You can only use it as a whole entity now. Tibayla mandamar Torah chatuma nitna. So question according to the one who says that the Torah was given as a whole sefer. Kevin to chatuma nitna in kodvin. Because it was chatuma, then you don't do it any other way besides being a whole sefer Torah. Oh, Dilma, kevin to lefshar kadvinan. Or maybe we invoke the principle that we've used till now, that it's not possible to get every child his own sefer Torah. So we allow you to write down section by section so that he can learn from it. Amalei in kodvin. Says you're not allowed to write down sections. Umatam. What is the reason? The fish ain't kodvin. Because you don't write it down. So Rashi over here says, Avisha in Kofim, he says, I feel the mandamar, migilah, migilah, not kevan, idbak, idbak. Basically, he's making a halachic statement, which is, you're not allowed to do it. Meaning that even according to the one who says it was given in sections, once the Torah was given as a single unit, you're not allowed to break up the unit. And so his answer is that you're not allowed to break it up into units, and that's the answer. Others you can see here in the Oroch that's brought in the Masorah Tashas, he says that, Komar, Kabbalahu, the Bnei Adam, Lichtov Hochi. He didn't say that that's the reason that you're not allowed to write it down, but rather, the Masorah that we have is that we don't write it down in sections. Not that he was giving a halachic opinion, but simply saying the Masorah we have is that we don't write these Megillot for the children. We only give full Sifrei Torah, or we only have them learn from full Sifrei Torah. Etevei, Afi asta tavla shel zav, shepashat sota ketuv aleha. Hilni Amalka, the Mishnah in Yoma tells us, put together a golden tablet that had Parshat Sota written on it, so that the Kohen who had to write Parshat Sota could copy from the tablet that she had. So that was a donation that she made to the Mikdash that she was praised for. But what you see here is that you're writing a section of the Torah down. That's not the whole Torah, that's simply Parshat Sota. So Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Mishum Rabbi Yanai, Ba'alef Bet. The answer to that question is, it's not that it was written down as a Sefer Torah, and now you have a section of a Sefer Torah, but it's rather it was written Aleph Bet, what Rashi calls Roshei Tevot. They didn't have the whole words there, they just had the Roshei Tevot, they had the first letter, maybe the last letter, a couple letters of each word, so that it would remind the Kohen. When he looked at it, it would remember what was written in the Parsha, and then he would write based on that. That's the way Rashi explains it. Others explain it that it was scattered, meaning rather than being written row by row by row, the letters either were far apart or the words were far apart, so it didn't look like a single parsha, or it didn't look like a Sefer Torah, but if you read through it, you'd be able to figure out what the parsha looked like. Others suggest that it was written in very narrow lines. I think the Rambam here explains that it's written in very narrow lines, only three words per line, which also would be something that normally would not be kasher for Sefer Torah. It's not considered to be ktivah because you don't have a significant amount of material on each line. One of those ways described by the Rishonim, it was done here in order to avoid this problem. Eitavei, that doesn't seem to make sense because, as the Gemara notes over here, we have Breitot that seem to say otherwise, which is, Kushur Kotev, when the Kohen writes Megillat Sota, Ro'eh, he looks at the tablet, V'kotev, Mashakatu B'tavla, that he writes down that which is written in the tablet. If he's writing what's written in the tablet, that means that he's copying. If he's copying, it means that the whole Parsha is there. So, Ema, Imen, the Breita to read, Kamasha Ketubah Tabla. He's not writing exactly what's in the tablet, but like what's written in the tablet. The tablet has some sense of what he's supposed to write, and from that, he can put together what he is supposed to write, not that he's copying directly from the tablet. Eitavei, but we have a more explicit Breita. Shukotev, Ro'eh B'Tavla, V'Kotev, Masha Ketubah Tabla. He looks in the tablet, and he writes down from the tablet, Ma'u Ketuv B'Tavla, and what is written in the tablet? Im Shechav, Im Lo Shechav. So here it tells you that it's written out. Now, first of all, as Tosafot points out over here, there's no such pasuk. You can see here on the side, there's a Girsa Achrina, which is Im Satit, Im Lo Satit, because that doesn't exist. Or, as Tosafot says, Im Lo Shechav, and then Va'at Ki Satit. That's what it means. It's just hinting to you thematically about what's found in the Parsha, but it's telling you that he was copying exactly what was on the tablet. He's putting onto cloth. Where it says, Achamayaskinan b'sirugin. He does it in skipping. Now Rashi says, what he does is he have the first couple words of every pasuk, and then you finish it off with Roshei Tevot. So the beginning of each pasuk is there, so that he gets a start, and then afterwards it's Roshei Tevot. Others explain like they did before, which is there are a couple words there, and then the rest is scattered, or the rest isn't written in single lines, meaning that it's moved around or shorter lines, whatever that is, it's not written down fully. So the Gemara here is unwilling to accept the fact that you could write down a portion of the Torah like she did on this tavla, but rather you have to write down the whole thing. Ketanae, this is like a machloket tanaim that we have. In kodvim migilah letinok lehitnaei ba, that you're not allowed to write down sections of the Torah for the child to learn from. Mutar. But if he intends to finish it later, then it's okay. Rashi says over here, if he intends to make it into a full Sefer Torah later on, that's fine. So even if he started and he uses the section that he started, he hands to the kid to learn from, but then he plans on finishing it, that's fine because it's on the way to being a full Sefer Torah. And just like when a sofer writes a Sefer Torah, he doesn't write the whole thing. He writes it section by section and then they put it together. So the same thing over here. But what that shows you is if you just want to use it alone, that would not work. Rav Yehuda Omer, Bibreshit, Ad Dor HaMabul, B'Torat Kohanim, Ad Bayi B'Yom HaShmini, that if you want to have a Megillah, that's fine. If you're going to write Breshit, the section that's considered to be a section or Megillah is from the beginning of Bereshit until the story of Dor HaMabul. And in Torat Kohanim and Vayikra, it is from the beginning of Vayikra until Vayi Bayom HaShmini, the consecration of the Mishkan. So those are sections or Megillot that you're permitted to write. And you see here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to write sections or Megillot for the child to learn from. Just have to know what those Megillot or what those sections are. Over here, he brings down two possibilities of those sections. One is from Bereshit, one is from Vayikra. But it has to do with different minhagim or misorot as to where children start learning chumash. Do children start learning chumash from Bereshit? Or do children start learning chumash from Sefer Vayikra? Based on the pidgam, yavo tehorim, v'yomod tahara. That those that are tahor, the children, the purest nishamot, should learn about the inyanei tahara, which are found in Sefer Vayikra. And therefore, there was a minhag to start the children learning the Sefer Vayikra rather than have them starting from Bereshit. And you see both of these practices mentioned in the two Megillot that he mentions that they would prepare for a child. One is from Bereshit, one is from Vayikra. Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Bano, Torah, Megillah, Megillah Nitna. So now we're going back to that machloket that we mentioned before, based on the question that was posed by Abaye about writing a Megillah for a Tinok. Then we said there, it's a question according to both opinions. Here the Gemara is discussing both opinions, how the Torah came about to be put together. So Rabbi Yochanan says the name Rabbi Bano, that the Torah was done section by section. Shenemar, az amarti, hine bati mimigilat sefer katuv alai. This is David Amelech who's speaking about the Sefer Torah. The way that Rashi describes the pasuk here is that David says, well, the Sefer Torah has a hint at my existence in it. Rashi claims that that has to do with the parsha of Sdom ve'Amorah. In the destruction of Sdom ve'Amorah, it says over there that Lot ve'shtei benotav, his two daughters, Hanimtzaot, that are with him, are saved. And Rashi says that Hanimtzaot, that word Hanimtzaot means that I am Matsoi, I am found here today because of the salvation that was granted to the daughters of Lot, because David is a descendant of Rut HaMoaviah, and the child born to Lot and his older daughter is Moav, and that of his younger daughter is Ammon, who also is descendants, also joined Klal Yisrael through Rechavam. So because of that, he says, I was found in the Sefer Torah. Others indicate it's based on the Sefer Dvarim, the Psukim in Sefer Dvarim that say, Lo Yavo Amoni Umoavi B'Kal Hashem. And over there, the drush is, Amoni Umoavi and not Amoni Umoavit. So because of that, David says, I am found in the Sefer Torah. Azamarti Nebati Migilat Sefer Katuv Alai. The Torah is written about me, but he calls it a Migilat Sefer. He calls it a book of Megillot. Shimon Galakish Omer Torah Chatuma Nitna. Shimon Galakish says, no, the Torah was given and is a whole unit, Shinemar, in Sefer Dvarim, when Moshe is giving the Sefer Torah. It says, Lakoach et the Sefer HaTorah Zot. Take this Sefer Torah. Gives you a full book, a full Sefer Torah. Vidach Nami Aktiv Lakoach. Doesn't it say for Rabbi Yochanan, the pasuk that Reish Lakish brings, how the Batar Didbak? That was after all the Megillot were put together. Then Moshe says, take this Sefer Torah. Vidachna miktiv migdilat Sefer. For Reish Lakish, doesn't it also say Megillat Sefer, the pasuk from Tehillim? Megillat Sefer ketuv alai. How dechol Torah kula ikre Megillah. That's because the whole Torah is called the Megillah. Dichtiv. Vayomer elai ma taru eh. In the Nevuah of Zechariah, it says to Zechariah, what do you see in your prophecy? Vomer, ani roya Megillah afa. I see a Megillah that's flying up at a reference to the Sefer Torah. And he calls the Sefer Torah Megillah. So the word Megillah is sometimes used not just to reference to sections, but Megillah is used to reference to the entirety of the Torah. Inami, look at the Rabbi Levi. Or the other possibility is, like Rabbi Levi, Dama Rabbi Levi, Shmoneh Parshiot, Namru Biyom Shukam Bo Mishkan. There were 8 Parshiot that were said on the day that the Mishkan was consecrated, Ve'elohein. And these are the Parshiot. Parshat Kohanim, which is Parshat Emor, which discusses the protocols and the requirements for Kohanim. Parshat Levi'im, which is referencing to Parshat Balotcha, the sanctification of the Levi'im and the service of the Levi'im in the Mishkan. Rashi brings an alternate opinion over here that says it's referring to the Parshiot Maaser, which Rashi says doesn't make sense. First of all, it's called Parshat Maaser and not Parshat Levi'im. And it's not relevant to the Mishkan. They don't eat Maser. Maser is not relevant until many years later. So it's not an issue of the day, and that doesn't make any sense. Upashat Tmeim, Rashi claims here, Pashat Tmeim is Pashat Pesach Sheni, that those individuals who are Tmei, the Nefesh Adam, who approached Moshe and say, we're not going to be able to bring the Korban HaPesach. Many Rishonim, including here, you can see Tosafot, reject that understanding because they don't think it happened on that day, and they don't think it was an issue right then. But rather, Venira, the Pashat Tmeim, Hayinu Pashat Vayinazru. Rather, that Pashat Tmeim is continuing in Pashat Emor. The first Parsha talks about the Kedusha of the Kohen, and then right afterwards it speaks about the Tumah, or the requirements of Tumah with regards to the Kohen, and that's the Parshat HaTmeim, has to do with Tumah Tara of the Kohen. Others suggest that it's speaking about the Parshiot in the remainder of Vayikra, which is Tazria, Mitzora, Tumat Sheretz, Tumat Nevela, all those type of Tumot, and that's Parshat HaTmeim. Parshat Shiluach Tmeim, the Parsha that is found in Parshat Naso, which tells you about the Tmeim that have to be thrown out or taken out of the Machaneh when the Machaneh Shechinah is there. Tmeim, Lemeit, can't go into the Machaneh Shechinah. That the Tmei Nigaim have to leave all the Machanot, have to be outside the Machaneh Yisrael. And the Tmeim Keri cannot be even in the Machaneh Leviyah. So here you have different requirements about where they can be, and that's important here if the Mishkan is going into service. Pashat Acharei Mot. So the Parshat Acharei Mot is the Parshat of Yom HaKippurim. So even though technically it's not relevant on that day, still it is relevant because it speaks about going in Lifnai V'Lifnim. And the truth is, it's not so far-fetched because it actually, a lot of what takes place in the Parshat of Yom HaKippurim is mimicking the Avodah Parshat Yom HaShmini, of what they did on Yom HaShmini. So there is interplay between the two Parshiot. Parshat Shtuye Yayin, which is the Parshat immediately after the death of Nadav v'Avihu, it is Pashat Shtuyei Yayin that you're not allowed to go in drunk into the Mishkan. Pashat HaNeirot is Pashat Balotcha, which is the instructions to Aaron to light the menorah, which is obviously relevant. And the last one is Pashat Parah Aduma, which is Pashat Chukat, about how to be Metaher oneself from Tumat Hamet. Now Rashi over here says something, it's something that I don't have an answer to, but always has bothered me, which is Pashat Para Duma, Lefish V'yom HaMacharat, Nisrafa Para Liot Nitarim Lepischeyem. On the second day, meaning after they consecrate the Mishkan, and the second day they do a Para Duma, Kodem Lechein Lo Yochlu La'asota. Before that point in time, they couldn't do it. Be'inan V'izal Nochach Pnei Ol Moed. Because you have to do the Hazaah Nochach Pnei Ol Moed. But there is a chicken and egg problem over here, which is that in order to do the Parah Adumah, you need someone who's already Tahor to perform the service of the Parah Adumah. And therefore, if you only do it on the second day, that means on the first day, when they came into service, they didn't have that Tahara. And if they're doing the Parah Adumah in order to be Tahorim, to do the service in the Mishkan, but it's going to only be done, they're only going to be Tahorim after the 7 days have elapsed. It means that they're only going to be Tahor by the eighth day when they, either on the Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or over here, the suggestion is that Bo Bayom, they got the Parsha Paru Duma, which means that this only started after the consecration of the Mishkan into Nisan is when they got the Paru Duma, which means that they didn't have it for the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, and for the first day, I mean the eighth day itself, that's only when they got Paru Duma, it only started afterwards. So what do they do about starting the service in the Mishkan, as well as what about Ar Minhag? When is Ar Minhag to read Parshat Parah? Ar Minhag to read Parshat Parah is always before Parshat HaChodesh. We always read it then because they have brought the Parah in order to be to Horim, in order to consecrate the Mishkan. Well, as Rashi says here, without the Mishkan, you can't do a Parah Duma because you need Pnei Ol Moed. But on the other hand, if you want to be Tahor to use the Mishkan, you want to do it beforehand. So it seems to be there's some tension here about exactly how it worked in the first time, in order to get them to be Tahorim from Tumat HaMeit. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is Tamei Tumat HaMeit. At least that's the way the Gemara learns about the Atzmot Yosef. That the Atzmot Yosef are with Moshe Rabbeinu in Machaneh Leviyah. That's how the Gemara proves that a Tamei Meit is allowed into Machaneh Leviyah or onto Har HaBayit, is because Moshe had the Atzmot Yosef imo. That's the case. Moshe was Tamei Meit. And we know that Moshe serves in the Mishkan for the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, as well as possibly on the first day. It's a machloket as to whether on the eighth day he actually served in the Mishkan. But that means Moshe is servicing the Mishkan, and he is Tamei Meit, unless they had a Parah Adumah. Again, it's a little issue. I'm just raising the issue, but it comes up here because they mentioned Pashad Parah Adumah. Now, as far as what Rabbi Levi is doing over here, it's machloket in the Rishonim as to whether Rabbi Levi is a continuation of the previous statement, because this is according to the one who says that the Torah was given whole, according to Reish Lakish. Why does it have the word Megillah? The Gemara gives an alternative answer, because of Rabbi Levi. Which means that Rabbi Levi is saying that there were these Megillot, and then that changes a little bit how we have to view Reish Lakish's opinion that the Torah was given in whole. Which is that if it was given whole, then what are these Megillot doing over here? And therefore you have to amend his position and say there were Megillot, but in the end, it was put together as a whole Sefer Torah. Well, that, how does that differ from what Rabbi Yochanan says? And that's what Tosafot takes up over here and tries to explain that. He says here, Tema, Gichtiv, Vayikach Sefer Abrit. We just read in last week's Parsha, Parshat Mishpatim, with regards to the Mamad, whether it's at Har Sinai or right after Har Sinai, it says there that Moshe takes the Sefer HaBrit. And Rashi on his Perush in Chumash says, that Sefer HaBrit is the Torah from Breshit until the end of Mishpatim. That was what they were making the covenant over, was that Sefer HaBrit. Well, if that's the case, then they're making a covenant over Breshit until then. What does Reish Lakish do with that? He says they only got a Sefer Chatuma. How come this is written? So, B'nir Lefaresh, Delo Kamar Chatuma Nitna. So that, when he says now we have to amend our understanding of Reish Lakish, not that it was given fully done. Shelo Nichtava Ad LaSof. It's not just written all at the end. The difference between him and Rabbi Yochanan is the order in which it was written. According to Rabbi Yochanan, they just wrote sections and sections, and then they put it together in the end. According to Reish Lakish, they also wrote it in sections, but they didn't go out of order. And that means that we have Parshiyot, we know that, if you go into the beginning of Bamidbar, we have flashbacks, we have dates that are before or after events that are there, Ein Mukdam U'Muchar B'Torah. And therefore, it's not necessarily chronologically in order, the Torah. And so what Reish Lakish says is that when you get the Torah, they didn't write it section by section and then go back and fill in sections, but rather, Moshe only wrote things that had happened already. That means that if it hadn't happened already, you'd have to wait to write that portion down and then write that section down. So you only write down sections that were already relevant and already had happened. And that's what we see maybe from Rabbi Levi as well. That the parshiot that were needed for the eighth day were written down on the eighth day, even though they are found all over the Torah. So it was only written in that manner. Deish parshiot shenemru tchila lefine otam haktuvim lefneem, lo nechtavad shenemar lo, ota shenechtuva lefaneha. That Moshe didn't write down the later parsha until the earlier parsha was already written. And so he sees it being done ala seder, versus Rabbi Yochanan, who says you have this section, and in the end they put it together in whatever the right order is supposed to be. So B'Kohi Tosfot solves the problem and says, Reish Lakish says they only wrote in order. That means if there was an out-of-order parsha, you have to wait to write the later parshiot until the earlier parsha, which is chronologically later, was already written, and then add in the other parshiot that happened earlier. But Rabbi Yochanan just says they wrote section by section, and then they put it together afterwards, even though the chronology wasn't the same as how they had written it down, because Torah is not in chronological order. The other way to deal with this, to suggest that even though it was written Megillah, Megillah, even according to Reish Lakish, in the end, when Moshe presents the Sefer Torah, he doesn't take those Megillot and stitch them together into a single Sefer Torah. Rather, he copies from the Megillot to make a Sefer Torah. And so Moshe Rabbeinu's Sefer Torah is written as a whole Sefer Torah, but he's copying out of the Megillot that he has. So that may be another way to deal with Reish Lakish's opinion that there's Megillah, Megillah, but in the end, it's one Sefer Torah. Suppose Rabbi Yochanan just says he took Megillot and stitched them together. Rabbi Reish Lakish will say no, he copied over from the Megillot to make a single Sefer. That might be another way to explain the difference in their opinion, but it's very difficult from a time's perspective to say Moshe rewrote a whole Sefer Torah in Sefer Dvarim. So all of Sefer Dvarim is done over 37 days. So it would be very hard to imagine that Moshe wrote a whole Sefer Torah during that period of time. So either you have to say that miraculous, or you have to say that maybe that's not the right answer to the question. The other way to deal with it, which is the Rabbeinu Tam, who says that the Girsa here is not Inami. That Rabbi Levi has nothing to do with the section before, but rather Amar Rabbi Levi. Amar Rabbi Levi means it's a new Memra and has nothing to do with the Gemara before. And it's an independent statement. The Gemara, while it's on this topic, says Amar Rabbi Levi, because it's also relevant that there's certain sections of the Torah that were given when they were relevant, even according to Reish Lakish. And here you have these eight parshiot that are given, but not that it's a proof or a connection to the previous question that was asked on Reish Lakish, rather an independent statement by Rabbi Levi, and that's Rabbeinu Tam's Girsa that takes it out, and therefore makes it somewhat easier to deal with Reish Lakish's opinion, but still, it's not straightforward, and you still probably need the answers that Tosafot says because of Sefer Abrit. Now you have other Rishonim who believe that Sefer Abrit is not from Reishit until Mishpatim, but rather Sefer Abrit are the halachot that they had learned at that, until that point in time. Not necessarily that it was a written Sefer. Tosafot is premising his question on the way that Rashi interprets Sefer Abrit. But if you interpret Sefer Abrit differently, then you could also solve the problem in that manner. So there are alternate ways to solve this problem, but to explain this machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Torah rov bichtav umiyut al peh. That the Torah, the majority of it is the written Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh is the minority. Now obviously, today if we take a look at that, that just doesn't seem true. So there are two possibilities about that. One possibility is that the core essence of Torah Shebaal Peh is much smaller, but the fact that we have to explicate on it and that we have machlokot expand the content of the Torah Shebaal Peh to a much larger body of work. And then because of that, it becomes the majority. Or you could argue that Torah Shebaal Peh is the dynamic aspect of Torah. Torah Shebichtav is the fixed aspect of Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh is to develop and works as times change, as situation changes. And therefore, the Torah Shebaal Peh is going to become a bigger and bigger body of work over time. But when it's given, it was a much more narrow in scope, and then it expands over time. The way that Rashi deals with it, which is a third way, is rov bichtav, rov haTorah tzluya b'midrash, shektuva, b'midrash b'klal uprat, gzeir shava v'shar midot shaTorah nidresh b'hem. But Rashi does is he takes a portion of Torah Shebaal Peh and calls it Torah Shebichtav, which is, for instance, the shlosh esrei midot shaTorah nidresh b'hem, which is Rabbi Shmuel's shlosh esrei midot. By the way, that's Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha again that we met, the one that was saved from the jail by Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, that Rabbi Shmuel, Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosh Esrei Midot, Torah Nidresh B'hem, that's the same Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. So his Shlosh Esrei Midot, Rashi calls that Torah Shebichtav now. Even though it is a method of derivation from the Torah Shebichtav to get the Torah Shebaal Peh, but since it's derived directly from the words of Torah Shebichtav, that's included in the aspects of Torah Shebichtav. It's somewhat reminiscent of the Rambam's position, which is the Rambam believes that things that are ketuvim b'Torah include those things that come through the Shlosh Esrei Midot, that those aren't considered to be Torah Shebaal Peh, that's considered to be Torah Shebichtav. That's why Rashi solves the problem, and the Miuta Al Peh is that Ein Remez L'Lomod L'Abit Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh, he means literally, there's no Remez, there's no anything in the written Torah, it's simply an oral tradition. That's called Torah Shebaal Peh. So Rashi narrows the scope of Torah Shebaal Peh and increases the scope of Torah Shebichtav by doing that to explain this Shita. Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk, Echtov lo rubei Torati kemo zar nechshevu, so that I will write down the majority of my Torah. So you see that the majority is in the written form. Yochanan amar rov al peh, that the majority is in oral transmission. Umiyut bichtav, and the smaller amount is in the written Torah. Shenemar ki al pi advarim ha'ele, based on these things. In al pi advarim ha'ele, through the Mesorah, that's the majority of the Torah that Hashem is instructing. Vidach ha'namiktiv echtov lo ruvei Torati. So wait a minute, doesn't Rabbi Yochanan have to deal with the fact that the posuk in Hosea says that the rov of the Torah seems to be bichtav? Ha'wat mu'ei kametama? That is a rhetorical question. It is not a statement of fact, but rather a rhetorical question. Echtov lo ruvei Torati? If you want me to write down the majority of Torah, halo kmo zar nechshevu, then they will be like strangers. There are two ways to interpret this. One way is to say that they're not even keeping the stuff that I have written down. So you want me to write down more of it? They're already ignoring or zarim. They are strangers to the Torah that is written. I should write down more because they're going to reject even that. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is, if we write everything down, uniqueness of Klal Yisrael will be compromised. Because Zar Nechshavu, they'll be like outsiders. Because just like the Torah Shebichtav has been, quote-unquote, usurped by other religions and was translated, and therefore the other religions or other individuals have privy to the Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebaal Peh, by definition, will remain something unique to Klal Yisrael because this transmission is oral. And if its transmission is oral, then other people don't have access to it. And that's what it means. If I write down everything, then I've now compromised that unique aspect of Klal Yisrael. Kamo, kamo, zar nechshavu. If I write it all down, that's what's going to happen. So that's the way Rabbi Yochanan explains it. Vidach nami aktiv. And for Rabbi Elazar, his Talmud, Chover, Elazar's arguing on him, doesn't it have the pasuk, yalpi advarim eileh? Ha'o mishum dit kifei lemigmerinu. Even though they are smaller quantitatively, they are much harder in terms of transmission because you have to memorize them, you have to learn them. It seems like more, not because content-wise it's more, but simply because it takes more effort and it takes more undertaking in order to learn them. So, Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani, Miturgumenei, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani is Doresh from the Miturguman of Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, whether that means that he heard it from the Turguman or he heard Reish Lakish speaking through his Miturguman. Tiv, the part of Torah says, Katov, Lucha et advarim ha'ele, write down these items. Uchtiv, ki alpi advarim ha'ele, that you will do it orally. Ha'ketzad, how do we reconcile between pasuk that says you have to write it down, and pasuk that says you transmit it orally? Devarim shebichtav, i'atai reshai lo'omram bepeh. Conclusion from this is that items that are supposed to be written down are only allowed to be written down. You may not do them by heart. You may not say them out alpeh. Dvarim shalpeh, things that are supposed to be transmitted orally, i'atai reshai lo'omram bichtav, you're not allowed to write them down. Which means that Torah shebichtav can only be done bichtav and not through an oral transmission or by heart. And the oral transmission, the Torah Shebaal Peh, can only be done as an oral transmission or by heart, and it cannot be written down. Bei Rabbi Shmuel Tano. Bei Rabbi Shmuel learns it out this way, Eile. Tov lecha et advarim ha'eile. Ha'eile means these items, which is a miut. Only these items are allowed to be written down. V'yata kotev halachot. You're not allowed to write down halachot, which is the Torah Shebaal Peh. So based on that, you have a requirement that Torah Shebichtav remain Bichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh remain Be'al Peh. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, lo karat HaKadosh Baruch Hu brit im Yisrael al Mishvil Dvarim Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Yochanan, seemingly l'shitato, says that the kritut brit between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu revolved around Torah Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Yochanan says the robe of the Torah is Torah Shebaal Peh. And according to one of the explanations before, that's how he explains the pasuk from Hosea, is that it was all written down, then all the other nations would have the same access as we do to it, and therefore it is a kazar nechshavu. We would be like outsiders. We wouldn't be unique. So the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael is through Torah Shebaal Peh, and Rabbi Yochanan emphasizes that Torah Shebaal Peh is the majority, and now he says that the covenant between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu revolves around Torah Shebaal Peh, shenemar apiyot varim ha'ele karati itchabrit v'et Yisrael. He says, based on these things, dvarim, pi ha-dvarim, these oral things, that's where the covenant between me, you, and Klal Yisrael stands, is revolving around these dvarim, shebe'al peh. Now, just in conclusion here, this leads us to a halacha, which says that if it's bichtav, you have to do it bichtav. If it's ba'al peh, we have to do it ba'al peh. And we actually don't do either of those. We tend to read sukim that are bichtav from Tanakh, ba'al peh. And Torah Shebaal Peh now has been committed to writing. So the Gemara already addressed the idea that Torah Shebaal Peh is committed to writing because of Eid Lasot Hashem, Heferu Torah Techa. And as the Tosafot read says over here, Ubezeh Samach Rabbi, that's what Rabbi relied on, Shekutav HaMishnah, V'acharav Katvu HaBraitot, V'Ravina V'Ravashi Katvu HaTalmud, Chen Kol Chochmei HaDorot Kotvim Perusheyem. And just like me, the Tosafot read is writing down our Perush. We are relying on this Eid Lasot Hashem Heferu Torah Techa, which is in the Galut, and under the pressures of Galut, the oral transmission could not survive, and the only way to maintain the oral transmission was to have it written down. And so for the sake, or the greater sake of the Torah Shebaal Peh, we have to violate the restriction against writing it down in order to preserve it. So that's Eid Lasot Hashem Heferu Torah Techa. But what about the other way around? Which is that Torah Shebichtav has to be done Bichtav, and you're not allowed to quote Psukim then, or read Psukim, but Al Peh, because that would be an abrogation of the requirement that it be done Michtav or Mitocha Michtav. Part of that might have to do with why. Why is it that Dvarim Shebichtav have to be done Bichtav? If you say that the reason for that is that you won't make a mistake, we want you to read it from the Ktav so that there aren't any mistakes made, then the reason that you may be able to read it Be'al Peh is where we're certain you're not going to make a mistake. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that it is a Gzerat HaKatuv. If it is a Gzerat HaKatuv, then why are you permitted to say it Be'al Peh? It might be that you're only not allowed to say Be'al Peh when you're reading the Torah as Limud HaTorah. When you're learning Torah, you can't do it. But if you do Torah Kitfilah, then maybe in that instance, you wouldn't be restricted. And that leads to the psak that's brought down by the Mishnah Brura, that even though we prefer that you read Mitokach Tav, but certain things that where people know them so well, what you call Shkurim B'fi HaKol, everybody knows them by heart. For instance, Ashrei, Shema, parts of Tfilah, which are Dvarim Shebichtav, nevertheless, we permit people to say them Be'al Peh because they know them so well. So either that overcomes the problem of making a mistake, because people don't make mistakes because they know them so well, or it might be because they're done derech tefillah and not derech limud. And so being derech tefillah, you don't have to then read them mitoch haktav. That also might have nafkaminot sometimes with regards to saying birkat haTorah. Generally, we want you to say birkat haTorah before you do any part of tefillah. But if you're pressed against the wall and you can't do it by saying Birkat HaTorah, person came late to shul, something happened that they just now entered into a situation where they can answer the Kedusha, which involves Psukim, even though they haven't said Birkat HaTorah, or they're up against the Zman Kriyat Shema, they need to say it before they say Birkat HaTorah. In those cases, you have the same dispensation as possibly because you're doing it Derech Tefillah, not Derech Limud, that you can do it even without Birkat HaTorah. So those are two ways to deal with this problem of why people say Sukim by heart. The other possibility is that it only relates to Kriyat HaTorah. When you're actually reading the Torah B'tzibur, that's where the Dvarim Shebichtav have to be read out of a Ktav. Not when a person is just learning by themselves or speaking between themselves and learning. It has to do with the public reading of the Torah. It has to be done mitoch Ktav. That might be another way to deal with this issue of why today we say many Psukim by heart, even though they're supposed to be mitoch Ktav. And there are people who are makpid to try to do everything mitoch ktav. They daven out of a siddur. They say kiddush out of a siddur. They make sure to do anything that's bichtav. Or they're quoting psukim. They make sure to open up the Tanakh and quote the psukim directly from the Tanakh in order to be mekayim this halacha that dvarim shebichtav cannot be said be'al peh. All right, now we move on in the Mishnah, which said, Maravim bebeit ha-yashan mipnei darchei shalom. You don't move the eruv out of the older house or the place that it's been forever because of darchei shalom. The Gemara wants to understand what's happening here. My taima, why can't you move it? If you say that they were honored with the placement of the Eruv there, so you can't move it to another location. There was this shofar that was originally in the house of Rabbi Yehuda. And it moved from Rabbi Yehuda to Rabbo. Then it moves to Rabbi Yosef. Then it moves to the house of Abaye. In Musarova here, they're talking about the Rosh Yeshiva, or the leaders of the community at that time. First one that's mentioned here is Rabbi Yehuda. After you, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbo is the Rosh Yeshiva. Then after Rabbo passes away, Rabbi Yosef takes over. That's the Gemara on the last daf in Brachot. Then after that, they're telling me the Bayi takes over. And then afterwards, Rava takes over. So what they're saying here is this shofar moved around. Rashi claims it's the shofar that they blew on Erev Shabbat to signal the beginning of Shabbat. That shofar moved around, but you see here that even though it was a kavod for that house to have it, it still moved when the time came to move to Nuk's Rosh Yeshiva, it moved around. Most of the Rishonim reject Rashi's explanation. Rashi himself brings a second explanation, which Tosfot favors, is that the shofar that we're speaking over here is not the shofar that they blew, but rather the shofarot, like in the Mishnayot and Shkalim, which are the tztaka boxes, and that the shofar was the place where people sent money to the yeshiva in order to support the yeshiva and the Rosh Yeshiva. And that shofar was kept by the Rosh Yeshiva's house. And Tosafot favors that heavily because he says he doesn't understand Rashi's first explanation because the cities in which these individuals were Rosh Yeshiva are actually different. It moved around. And since they were in different cities, like Pumpadita, Mechuza, how can you talk about a shofar that's blown in Erev Shabbat? It's only relevant for that city. It's not relevant for other cities. So moving the shofar from place to place doesn't seem to make so much sense in terms of the blowing of the shofar, because each city needs to have its own shofar. But if you're talking about the yeshiva and the major yeshiva and where that stucco went, and people gave money to the yeshiva, it makes sense that it's where the Rosh Yeshiva is or where the house of Rosh Yeshiva is. But you see here that even though it was in one of their houses, that when it moved or the Rosh Yeshiva moved, the shofar, the stucco box moves with them. So too with the Eruv. Why can't we move the Eruv to another house if it's all an issue of kavod? Ela mishum chashdo. The answer is because of chashad. Now Rashi says, what is the chashd over here? Yechshadu et bnei achatzer shemetaltalim below Eruv. If it's always been in someone's house, then people will come into the house and see it's not there. They'll think that they didn't make an Eruv. And then they'll see people carrying around and they'll say they're carrying around without the Eruv Chatzerot. And again, the Eruv Chatzerot we're speaking about here is the Shnei Seudot, or the participation of the individuals. Usually today we use a box of matzah that's kept in a shul or kept in the Rav's house. So that's the Eruv Chatzerot that we're speaking about, which is the shared meal between all the parties that live in that area. If it's kept in one house, then if they come and they don't see it there, they're going to go, oh my goodness, why are they carrying? That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot brings the alternate, which is the chashad is, why did they move it out of this guy's house? Must have been that he was pilfering the Eruv Chatzerot. He was eating it on the side. He was consuming the Eruv Chatzerot, and they got upset that he was stealing, so they moved it to someone else's house. That's Ripnei Chashad. What's interesting here is that the Rambam has a completely different reading of what the issue was here. The Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot explains that what is the reason that you can't move the Eruv from the Bayit HaYashan is because the person in whose house the Eruv is kept gets a monetary benefit, which is that only people who do not live in that house have to contribute towards the Eruv. The one who has the Eruv in his house, because he has the Eruv in his house, he's taken care of. He doesn't actually have to donate to the Eruv Chatzerot. So there's actually a monetary benefit here. The fi sheyesh lehem bazeh anash, habayit shemnichem bo Eruv, einu tzarich liten et hapat. K'moshin be'er sham. You don't have to give in to the Eruv. So that monetary benefit, it goes to this individual. If you move it out of there, he's going to lose that monetary benefit. Based on that sheet of the Rambam, it's a little difficult because the Gemara here is searching for a reason. The Rambam gives a reason why you can't move it out, and it doesn't seem to be mishum chashad. It doesn't have anything to do with chashad. It has to do with the fact that this guy is getting a monetary benefit, and you can't take that away, or that right, away from him. And so therefore, the mipnei chashad here becomes a secondary issue in the Gemara, not the primary issue or the primary reason why you can't move it. Right now, the Gemara continues with the remainder of the Mishnah, which is Bor Shekaruv Karov Yama. And the Mishnah mentions that the cistern that is closest to the water channel gets to fill first. Itmar Bnei Nahara. When you're talking about people along the stretch of a river, Rav Amar Tatai Shatu Maya Bereisha. Who has the first rights to use the water from the river? Is it a people that are downstream? Shmuel Amar, Ila'ai Shatu Maya Bereisha. The people upstream get the first right. So, Bidim Mezel, if there's enough flowing water in the river that if somebody upstream draws water off of it and somebody downstream drops off water off it, both of them can do it at the same time and the river continues to flow. I mean, it's a strong enough river, a big enough river by which anybody can take from it and it does not diminish the ability of other parties to take from it, then Kuliyama Lo Plige. Nobody argues over there that you just take whatever you have to do. You can draw the water out of the river and nothing happens. Ki Plige, where's their argument? B'miskar Vashkuye. In the case where they have to dam the river in order to water the fields. So the problem here is that they have channels running off the river. They have these irrigation channels. They have these watering holes that come off the river. And they have to fill them. How does it get filled? If it can get filled by simply drawing the water out of the river and the river is not affected by it, then do it as you please and when you please because you're not affecting any other party. Or if it can be done even with the overflow of the river without affecting the flow of the river, that's fine. The question is when there's not sufficient water in the river to allow for the filling of these channels or these cisterns, what you have to do is you dam the river and you divert the river into those channels or into those cisterns, and then you let it release it again. Who gets the first right to fill their channels and their borot? Rav claims it's the people downstream that get that right. Shmuel says it's the people upstream that get that right. Because whoever dams the river is going to affect the other parties here. So Shmuel Amar Eli Shatu Maya Bereisha, the people upstream get the first right to do this. Damri Ana Mikarvina and Tvei. We're closer to the source. Since we're closer to the source, we get to first fill ours, and then we let the river go, and you'll fill yours afterwards. Rav Amar Tataisha to Maya Bereisha. The lower people, lower down or downstream, get to do it first. Amrei nara kepashtei lezel. Let the river go in its normal course. The lower down on the river that you dam the river, the more that the river is running its normal course. So the people downriver say, normal course, and therefore we get the first rights, according to Rav. Shmuel says that, no, the people upriver say we're closer to the source, we should be the first ones to take off the river. I would assume that the way it works is the downstream goes first, means you start at the lowest and you move up to the top, or you start at the top and you move down to this. Tanan, our Mishnah. Bor hakarov la'ama mitmalei rishon. The cistern that is closest to the watering channel or the irrigation channel fills first. Mipnei darchei shalom. Because of darchei shalom. So you see from our Mishnah that it seems to be the people upstream or by the source should be the first to get it. Targum ha-shmuel alibi d'Rav. Shmuel explains this according to Rav. Ba'ama mitalechet al-pi boro. It's a case where the channel runs right by the cistern. He doesn't have to dam the river or the water channel in order to fill his cistern. It happens automatically. It's so close to the river that it fills automatically. So in that case, even Rav will agree, the first one on the road will take it. I mean, you have someone with a cistern very close to the channel, someone with a cistern further away. The one that's closer in, even though he's upstream, will get it first because that's the natural flow of the channel. That doesn't mean that you're allowed to do it necessarily to put it there. But if it's already there, then when the channel goes by it and fills it automatically, the guy is not doing anything. It's going to happen anyway. And there Rav will agree. Gemara says, Yochi mai the membra. If that's the case, it's so obvious. If the river's running and filling his cistern anyway, then what's the question about whether he should or shouldn't? I mean, it's going to happen naturally. So why is there even a question here that he upstream should be able to do it first? The people downstream or down from the water channel can say to him, Sakar miskar v'ashke behindaza. Dam up your bore and stop the water from flowing into your cistern until we get filled. And then afterwards you'll fill it up like the rest of us. The word hindaza kfi mashiele l'chalidlot min ha-mishichat ha-river. You can fill it by drawing water out of the river. You can't just allow the river to fall into your bore. You're like almost taking away the water before it gets anywhere. So maybe they could have said this, Kamash Milan, that since he was already there and his bore exists, they can't stop him. So Rav agrees in that situation that the upstream person gets it first because of the nature of the way that his bore is situated relative to the river or the water channel where it fills automatically. So now, Amar Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, Hashta lo itmar ukhata lo kemar velo kemar. Since here we don't have any conclusion whether the luck is like Rav or Shmuel, Kodolim Govar, whoever's stronger wins. Meaning that whoever can dictate in these cases has what to be based on. If they can dictate, then they're going to win. So if the people downstream are stronger, they get it. People upstream are stronger, they get it because they have someone to rely on. They have a position that supports their... Now, the question is why? We have a principle in Shas that when Rav and Shmuel argue that halacha ke Rav be surei, halacha ke Shmuel be mamone. This is a case of mamone. No, the halacha should be like Shmuel. So Rashi solves that problem and says that Rav Huna bar Tachlifa does not hold of that principle. The late laid the hilchata kishmuel b'dinei. He just doesn't have that principle. But we who do have that principle, we would paskin like Shmuel. It's only Rav Huna bar Tachlifa himself who doesn't have that principle that ends up saying that it's a free-for-all. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim will believe here that for whatever reason, one of which may be that Shmuel defended Rav's position over here, and therefore it's not so clear that the locha should be like Shmuel because Shmuel came to the defense of Rav. Or the way that the Balei et Tosafot suggests over here, which is, Inami hocha mistaver time adurov. That over here, Rav's position makes more sense than Shmuel's position, even though the Mishnah seems to go against it, but his reasoning seems to be more logical, according to the Tosafot. And therefore, even though normally we would pass in like Shmuel, Rav's given extra power here because of the fact that he has a more logical argument. So for whatever the reason is, that would make it that in here, even though we normally pass like Shmuel, here we've evened it out, and therefore we don't know whether passing like Rav and Shmuel. So according to those that say that this is unique to Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, the conclusion here should be that we pass him like Shmuel. According to those that say that this is a general statement, and even if you hold like Shmuel and Dinei, it's still impacted here by the fact that Rav, either because Shmuel defended him or because he has a better logic here, is stronger in this case, then we're left with this indecision, and that's why I called the Olim Govar. Now, over here, we don't have what's called shuda de dayne. Usually, when we have a indecision with regards to halacha, we say the dayanim should decide. We let them decide the most logical outcome or the best outcome. The reason that we don't do that over here is because every situation is so unique that it'd be hard to say shoulder the daina without getting into every single detail of every situation. It's very hard to know what the outcome could be. And then even here, shoulder the daina may not be the proper way to deal with it. It might be just let the participants deal with it because they have on what to be somech no matter which way they come out with regards to this. So now the Gemara says, Rav Shimi Barashi, Ata the Kameda Abaye. Shimi Barashi wanted to have a chavrusa with Abaye. Amrlei, Lotvan Mar Bidona. Says, let me sit and learn with you during the day. Amrlei, Itla Idona Ledidi. During the day, that's my time to review. That's my chazara time. That's when I'm learning myself. I can't spend time with you learning during that time. Lotvan Mar Bilelia. Let me sit down with you at night and learn with you at night. He says, I have to water my fields at night, which is an interesting comment about Abaye, who we know was a Rosh Yeshiva, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and a Mora, and he was taking care of his fields at night. He was watering his fields at night. He says, I'll make you a deal. I'll water your fields during the day, and then we'll have a chavrusa at night. Meaning that you'll learn your stuff during the day, your chazar during the day. At night, when you're normally watering the fields, I'll do the watering for you, and then we'll be able to learn together at night. Amalei Lechaye says, yeah, that's great. I agree. I'm willing to do that. Azali Eli. So Rav Shimi Barashi goes to the people upstream. Amalei Tatai Shatu Mayu Bereisha. The people downstream get the right to water their fields first. Azali Tatai, he goes to the guys downstream. The people upstream get to do it first. So basically, he goes to each side and tells them that the other party has the right to do it first. Ben Taim, in the interim, and he is in the middle here, where he didn't have a right to either side. He dams the river. While the other two are waiting, he dams the river and takes the river and waters Abaye's field. So he basically held both the upstream and downstream people in abeyance. While he, in the middle, watered the fields of Abaye. So then, Kiato the Kameh de Abaye, when he came to Abaye, Amalei, Kibrei Dre Avadetli. Abaye is upset at him because he basically was Poseach HaShnei HaSipim. He passed him like Rav and Shmuel at once, when Rav and Shmuel's opinions are mutually exclusive. And someone who does something that is mutually exclusive when it's to their benefit, Nikra Rasha. And so Abaye is upset at Rav Shimon Ba'ashi that he passed him like Rav and Shmuel together to stop the people upstream and downstream in order to benefit himself. And he says what you did was wrong. Now, why did Rav Shimi Barashi do this? He might have thought that kol dalim gavar means or gives you permission to do it anyway. Doesn't mean you have to be like Rav or Shmuel. Maybe you can be like Rav and Shmuel. You can, whatever works, works. I mean, if you can convince the people to do it, then it works. That might be what Rav Shimi Barashi was thinking. Or he might have thought that Abaye was entitled to that because Abaye is the Rosh Yeshiva and he should have been given that right to do it first. But for whatever reason that Rav Shimi Barashi did it, Abaye rejects it and says you shouldn't have done it. And therefore, lo ta'imnu Abaye the period aishata. Abaye refused to eat the fruits from that field in that year because he thought that they were brought about by an action that was improper. Now, there are those that suggest that he sold the fruits and he took the money from them but he just wouldn't eat the fruits directly. But he wanted to demonstrate through not taking the fruits or not eating the fruits that year to the parties upstream and downstream that he thought what Rav Shimi Barashi did was wrong. Now whether they were already complaining after he did it, oh my gosh, how did he do this or why did he do this? And Abaye, by not taking the fruits, shows to them that he also did not approve of this and they didn't agree with this. So that was his way of placating them or, in a sense, removing the Chilul Hashem that was done here. Or whether Abaye just didn't feel comfortable doing it because he thought that what Rav Shimi Barashi did was wrong, nothing to do with the parties upstream or downstream. This actually is reminiscent of a Gemara that we saw in Nidorim, which yeah, the Gemara discusses two cities that are along a river, and there's limited resources in the river or the water, that the city that the river passes by first is allowed to take first, kedei chayehem, meaning to support their ability to live. And there, the Gemara says something unbelievable, which is that even for their laundry, they can take the water from there first, before it goes to the second city, even though the people in the second city will die from dehydration. So there the Gemara deals with whether laundry is dangerous. I mean, if you don't launder the clothing, it could leave you in situations that are life-threatening. Or is it that the rights are the rights of the first city without consideration about the second city? But this is reminiscent of that, which is when you're dealing with any flowing water body, who has the rights to take the water first and who has it second, and how do we work out that balance between them? Hanu Bei Bnei Bei Chamech. There were these individuals, maybe peasants, farmers from Bei Chamech. Dazu Karu Bereisha Dishanvata. They went and they dug out at the top of the Shanvata River. And then they pushed it back in at the bottom of the river. So basically what they did was, you have a river that's flowing. These farmers, these Bnei Chamech, went ahead and diverted the river around their fields and then dropped it back into the river. Over here, the Gaonim had a slightly different girsa, which is that instead of being Shanvanuta, they had Shanaya or Bar Shanaya. And the difference between them, Shanaya is where you divert the river completely. Bar Shanaya is where you only divert the river partially. I mean, you don't take all the river off, you just take a large proportion of it off and divert it around. So over here, the girsa of the Gaonim, you can see that in the Oroch over here, was that it was a Bar Shanaya, which is that they took it around the long way, but they didn't divert the whole river. They diverted a portion of the flow of the river around. Now, what ended up happening is that that slowed down the flow of the river. Because the river now no longer had the same volume of water that was running down it, it actually slowed the flow of the river, because that damming of it or diverting the water to go around the channel around their fields actually caused the water upstream to flow more slowly or to come down more slowly because it had less volume when it came downstream. And that causes a problem. So then, Atoi Lai Lekameda Abaye, the people upstream of this diversion come to Abaye, Amulei Kamatkil Lenarin. It is making the Nahar heavy. What do you mean making it heavy? It means it's slowing down the flow of the water, and it is then flooding our fields. Upstream, the fields are getting flooded because the water is not flowing fast enough to move downstream because of their damming the river, diversion of the river, and so it's backing up upstream, and that's flowing over their fields and flooding their fields. So Amar Lahu, here it's not clear who the Amar Lahu is. Is the Amar Lahu to the people upstream, or is the Amar Lahu to the Bnei Chamech who diverted the water? Karu behadayu tfei purta. Dredge the river, meaning that deepen the river bed in order to increase the flow of the water. Deepen the river bed slightly, and that will increase the flow of the water. So Amrulei, they said back to him, kavyav sheperin. That will dry out our fields. Now again, depends who he's speaking to. If he's speaking to the people upriver, he was saying to them, basically, you should deepen the riverbed right where it's diverted, along with the Bnei Chamech, and if you dip in the riverbed there, it'll increase the flow volume, and then the water upriver won't flood your fields. And the answer of the people upriver might be that if we deepen the riverbed, then our irrigation ditches will not fill anymore. Because now you drop the water level. If you drop the water level, the water no longer will reach our water ditches. Or if you say he was speaking to the Bnei Chamech, saying to them, deepen the riverbed in order to solve the flooding problem upriver, and the Bnei Chamech say, if we deepen the riverbed, it won't flow into our ditch, that might be the answer they're giving to Abaye. So it's either one, depending on who he's speaking to, that party is answering him that it won't work. Amar lo, so then he turns to the Bnei Chamech and says, Zilu sliku nafshaychu me'alta. Yeah, or mehocha. You guys have to stop this. You cannot divert the water at the expense of the other parties. So you can't dam the river and have it go to the side and then cause problems for the people upriver. So now, that would indicate that he is poskening in favor of Shmuel's opinion, which is that it is the upriver people get the first rights or can make determinations about the water. You can't take off the water and hurt the people upriver. On the other hand, you look in the Tosafot, he says, Prayesh Rabbeinu Chananel De'ilai. And he says, Sliku nafshaychu mehacha, he was speaking to the people upriver. And that his answer was, not that the Bnei Chamech, you can't do this, says the people upriver, too bad. If they did something that was legal and they took this ditch off the river, so then I can't stop them because called the Olim Govar. That's the Pesach Halacha over here that called the Olim Govar. So this conclusion over here might have something to do with what we said before, which is Halacha like Shmuel, and just Rav Huna bar Tachlifa doesn't hold of that din, that Halacha is like Shmuel Bedine, and that is why over here he paskins like Shmuel and says the upriver people are right, and the Bnei Chamech have to shut down their water channel. Or do you say that everybody agrees that normally the din is like Shmuel, but here, because of whatever reasons we mentioned before, it's a indecision between Rav and Shmuel, and then called Olim Govar. And that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel says, that he says to the people upriver, I can't do anything for you. This is not a case that can be adjudicated, because it's called Olim Govar, and since they are putting the ditch in, you can't stop them unless you guys are stronger somehow. Can overcome that problem. So Tosafot brings that sheet of the Rabbeinu Chananel, but then he says he favors Rashi's interpretation. that he was speaking to the Bnei Chameich, because he says over here, Hayam et Abershi, Stamu et Amisibatam, Velo Dami the Rav Shmuel Klal. Because this is not like the din of Rav Shmuel. Because Rav Shmuel's question was about when intervene on the river for a short period of time. It's not a permanent change in the flow of the river, which that you're not allowed to do and affect other parties along the river. And therefore they said this is not connected to the din of Rav Shmuel. And that's why over here he paskin that the Bnei Chameich had to shut it down because they don't have a right to cause damage to other parties along the river. You might have a right to divert the water into your cistern and let it go again, but you can't permanently divert it and then hurt all the parties that are upriver from you. That is a nezek that you are causing them. In the other case, you're not causing nezek to the other person, you're just withholding from them the ability to get to the water. Over here, you're doing nezek biyadayim by diverting the channel, you're causing it to flood upriver, and that you're not allowed to do. Therefore, Tosafot favors Rashi's interpretation that the Bnei Chameich were told to shut down the channel because they don't have a right to hurt the people upriver, and has nothing to do with Rav and Shmuel's argument before. Right now, Mitzudot, Chayal, Vohot, V'dagim, Yeshvam, Gezel, Mishum, Darchei Shalom. They have a din of Gezel because of Darchei Shalom. And Rabbi Yossi said that there's real Gezel here. So now, what is the case here? Be'ozlei v'ohare, in these types of traps, Kuliyama lo plige. Nobody argues that for sure there's a din of Gezel over here. As Rashi explains over here, Ozlei are rishtot shel chutim. Those are nets that are made of string because they have a toch. Therefore, there's a kinyan made on whatever's trapped inside of them. And ohare is the same thing, just made out of reeds. Those are nets. Instead of nets, you have these reed baskets or flows that they have the fish go into, and you trap the fish inside of them. In that case, whatever's trapped inside of them belongs to the owner because there's an inside to the kli, and they're acquiring it, and everybody agrees there that it's a gezel. Ki plige, where do they argue? Belechi v'kokri. In a case of a lechi and a kokri, Rashi says a lechi here is a chikah, is a hook, and a kokri is a string of hooks. So a lechi is where he just throws out a fishing hook, and he hooks the fish. There's no kinyan because it's just caught on the hook. The other case is where he strings a string across the river and hangs hooks from that string, and it captures the fish. Also over there, there's no toch for him to acquire it. That's the way Rashi explains it. Others explain the lechi and the kokri over here as being different types of traps, meaning that their lechi can be used for wood or stilts, and these are traps that are held up by pieces of wood, and then when the animal or whatever item bumps into them, the trap closes on them and falls on them. So that might be what the lechi and the kokri over here. But again, all these are types of traps that are triggered but have no toch, no inside to them, and therefore there's no kinyan. Because there's no kinyan, that's why we have the Darchei Shalom that says if you take it, then that is gezel because of Darchei Shalom, because otherwise everybody's going to have their fishing hooks in there, and they hook something, someone else is going to go grab it. Doesn't make sense. So now, Metziat, Cheresh, Shoteh, V'Katan, and then Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gezel Gamor. In all these cases, Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says it's not Mipnei Darchei Shalom, but because of Gezel Gamor. Amar Rav Chista, as we mentioned on the Mishnah, Gezel Gamor Midivraham. It's not Gezel Gamor Midoraita. It's Gezel Gamor Midorabanan. He agrees that since there's no Kenyan here, there's no gezel midoraita, because you're not taking it out of the hand of its owner. You're not taking it from someone who possesses it yet, but it's still gezel gamor midorabanan, the main nafkamino. What's the difference if it's gezel because of Darchei Shalom or if it's gezel midorabanan? The answer is, lotzio b'dayanim, to take it out through adjudication, which is that in a case where it's only mipnei Darchei Shalom, that's not something that would be enforceable in court. It's just basic etiquette and a social contract between the parties, that we agree that we're not going to do this, otherwise it's going to become impossible to live in this situation. And that means that if they do it, they're not pasul the edut, and if they do it, you can't get it out in the court system. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says it is gezel midivrayam, it's theft midrabanan, and as Rashi explains over here, it's not gezel midoraita that they'll be pasul the edut, because eid chamas, someone who is a thief, cannot be an aid. That's not the case. But it is still gezel midrabanan, which allows you to take it into court, and the court can enforce the return of such gezel because it's deemed to be gezel midrabanan. And that's nafkamina between Rabbi Yossi and the Darchei Shalom that are mentioned in the Mishnah. So Tosfot Reed says over here that even though normally the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, because tamo v'nimoko imo, that's only hanimile v'shcholoik im yachid. That's only when he's arguing on a yachid. About im rabim, lo. But over here where he's arguing on the rabim, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, even though normally in a machloket, Rabbi Yossi would trump. Over here, we say that the halacha is kerabim, and it's considered to be gezel mipnei Darchei Shalom, and not gezel midivrayhem. Okay, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Samach Aleph, Amud Aleph.